And good afternoon, Kodiak. This is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM, streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. It's 11:59. We're coming up on the noon hour. We've got the midday report, followed by Spotlight coming up. Right now in Kodiak, it's 61 degrees. Another beautiful, beautiful summer day. We're about to get spoiled, aren't we? 0% of rain. It's going to be sun and a few clouds here and there. Little breezy, east-southeast wind coming in at 10 to 15 miles per hour. And tonight, low of 53, 10% chance of rain, but the clouds are just going to kind of move on through. Winds from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. And tomorrow, another beautiful day. It's going to be a great weekend. 61 degrees, winds 5 to 10 miles an hour from the east-northeast. Well, we got some headlines coming up on the noon hour. These are the headlines for Friday, July 10th. Well, it looks like Kodiak sees two more COVID-19 cases in less than 24 hours. We'll have details on that. Plus a new $35 million funding program for nonprofits from the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services for COVID-19 response. And let's see, the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center. Hey, they're awarding bicycles to the winners of their banner hunt right now down on the spit, if you want to go check it out. The Kenai Dipnet Fishery opens today, and Raven Airlines auction, bankruptcy auction, finally comes to a close. These headlines and more coming up on the Midday Report right after the national news from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Heading into the weekend, states are processing this week's sobering data on coronavirus's impact since the start of the pandemic. More than 3 million people in the U.S. are or have been infected. More than 130,000 people of all ages and backgrounds have died. As of midnight in Nevada, new restrictions will come into force for bars and restaurants in Las Vegas, Reno, and other places. Indoor restaurant dining's on hold across New Mexico. Similar actions underway in parts of Florida, which is emerging as the next epicenter of the pandemic. In the last 24 hours, the state confirmed more than 11,000 new cases and reportedly as many as 120 deaths in one day. Public health experts are encouraging masks in public and discouraging large gatherings, but with the election just months away, Florida's a must-win state for President Trump, so he's busy campaigning in favor of reopening schools in the fall and, most recently, in support of police in the wake of protests for greater police accountability and racial justice.
We'll always stand with the incredible men and women of law enforcement. We will never, ever defund our police, okay? That I can tell you. We're not defunding police. What's going on here, Admiral, when you hear defund the police, you're probably saying that's a foreign language, right? So just a terrible thing, but it's I assume this is going to be a fad. We'll call it a fad.
Trump at a briefing in the U.S. Southern Command Center in Miami. The president says he is now unsure about pursuing a new trade deal with China because of Beijing's handling of the coronavirus. Trump reached an initial agreement with China early this year, but NPR's Aisha Roscoe reports that was supposed to be just the first phase of the deal.
President Trump says he's not thinking about moving ahead with a phase two agreement with China at the moment. He told reporters on Air Force One that the U.S. relationship with China has been, quote, severely damaged due to the coronavirus pandemic, which he claims China could have stopped. Back in January, the U.S. and China signed a phase one trade deal, easing some tariffs on Chinese goods in exchange for the Chinese agreeing to buy more U.S. products. At the time, Trump hailed it as a victory and promised to pursue a phase two agreement that would address the extensive economic reforms long sought by the U.S. government. Aisha Roscoe, NPR News.
The Democratic presumptive presidential nominee, Joe Biden, is expanding his campaign's senior team to win back voters in America's heartland. Veteran operative Jackie Norris is the Biden campaign's newest senior advisor in Iowa, one of the states President Trump won in 2016. Lauren Dillon, who led Senator Amy Klobuchar's caucus campaign in the state, has been hired as Biden's campaign director in Iowa. You're listening to NPR News.
Locally, here's what we got from the Midday Report. The COVID-19 count for Kodiak Island has grown by two over the past 24 hours. This late Thursday evening, the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization was notified by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services about one more positive test result. And Friday morning, this morning, Alaska Public Health officials notified Kodiak officials of another positive case, the 12th known case in our area. Both cases are residents who have traveled recently. Kodiak Public Health officials have made contact with both of individuals and will continue to monitor their condition to ensure self-isolation and care. Contact investigations are underway for both cases. On Friday this morning, just about an hour ago, the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services announced a special program to distribute funding from the CARES Act to offer grants to nonprofits and faith-based organizations. It's called the Coronavirus Nonprofit Relief Fund Program, CNRF, a $35 million fund that will be administered by the Alaska Community Foundation. The ACF will process applications and distribute grant funds to nonprofits that provide what the state is calling essential services. According to the press release from the state, essential services are services that prevent or alleviate the negative impacts of COVID-19 on the economy, jobs, families, and children. The money can be used for a variety of expenses: medical, public health, payroll, compliance issues, and other costs necessary for the nonprofit to function. The catch is that grant funds may only be used to cover costs incurred due to the COVID-19 health emergency between March 1st and December 30th of this year and were not already covered by the state of Alaska's budget approved in March. DHSS Commissioner Adam Crum said, quote, "We're thankful for all the entities that have continued to provide services to Alaskans in need, and we hope this funding support will enable them to continue to do so," unquote. Grants will be prioritized based on the community impact and the nonprofit's ability to carry out public health projects. The grant will not be limited based on an organization's size, type of staff, or geographical location. Grant awards will range in size from $25,000 to $1 million through three rounds of funding. Nonprofits and faith-based organizations can find more information, including eligibility criteria, and apply for a grant by contacting the Alaska Community Foundation at 907-334-6700 or visiting alaskacf.org/CNRF. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, for Kodiak Kids, it wasn't exactly a treasure hunt, but it's the same concept. In this case, the treasure is your health. The Kodiak Emergency Operations Center put up Remember banners around town, and to win, kids had to go around town and find them. The banners list safety tips to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Today, right now, the EOC will award 5 BMX bicycles to the winners of the banner hunt. Their names were entered in a random drawing. Kodiak Police Chief Tim Putnam says he and other members of the EOC team wanted to encourage kids to be positive about preventing the spread of the disease and have some fun in the process.
I think the news has been pretty depressing lately with all this COVID-19 stuff. So this was just kind of a way to put a spin on it. You get the kids involved in something, usually their families get involved in it with them, and it's kind of a good way to spread an important message.
There will be a brief presentation of the bicycles to the winners at the Spit going on, I think, right now. Due to efforts to prevent the spread of COVID-19, this won't be a public event, but there will be some police cars and fire trucks on hand to mark the occasion. Alaska's largest personal dip net fishery draws tens of thousands of people, many from Anchorage, some from Kodiak, to the mouth of the Kenai River for a chance to fill their freezers with sockeye salmon. The fishery opens today, that's Friday, with a couple of changes in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Kenai's acting city manager, Terry Eubank, says that the city has installed extra hand-washing stations at the beach near the bathrooms and is going cashless at payment stations. He's also hoping guests will be proactive in preventing the spread of COVID-19 and bring their own hand-washing and sanitation supplies.
The last thing we really need is people coming down that are sick with the virus and spreading that to, you know, the influx of people that are going to be here.
There is currently no mask requirement in the Kenai Borough, but Eubank says he hopes people will take precautions when visiting local businesses and avoid coming if they are sick. So far, the early season sockeye run has been slower than last year's unusually strong run, with about 60,000 fish through the first sonar counter this year, as of July 8th, as opposed to 80,000 at the same time last year. Despite the slower start, Ben Moore, executive director of the Kenai River Sports Fishing Association, says that he thinks a lot of Alaskans will be coming down to the Kenai during the pandemic.
you get a double benefit. You're outside, you're going fishing, and you're offsetting your food costs, which help people out from all income brackets. So I anticipate that we'll have a very strong presence down in the personal use fisheries.
Moore says that makes it all the more important that dip netters take precautions and maintain social distancing when possible. A last-minute deal has emerged to keep Raven Air Group's core assets in Alaska. After a failed auction on Wednesday, a Southern California commuter service with Alaska ties has agreed to buy Raven's two passenger airlines, Penn Air and Corvus, for $8 million. As Nat Hurst with Alaska Public Media reports, the company's new leaders say they hope to put planes back in the air in a month. But for at least some Alaskans, they still have something to prove.
After a failed bankruptcy auction Wednesday, Raven's big planes appear to be on track to be flown to California and sold off in a liquidation process, to the disappointment of Alaskans who depended on Raven's regional service. Raven attorney Jane Kim described what happened next at a hearing Thursday morning.
However, after the auction was concluded, we received two new bids, which is the reason for all of the last-minute scrambling.
At least one group of Alaskans, which included transportation executive Jim Jansen and former Raven executive Bob Hajdukovic, was vying for Raven's planes, but in the end, Raven agreed to sell six of its Big Dash 8s, plus the operating certificates for Corvus and Penn Air, to a Southern California company called Float Shuttle. Float Shuttle stands for Fly Over All Traffic, and its current business is carrying California commuters who want to avoid being stuck in their cars, which is a wholly different universe from the rugged and foul weather flying that Alaska operators are often forced to do.
I think they're in for a pretty rude awakening, flying a float service out of Southern California to coming into Alaska.
That's Dennis Robinson, vice mayor of Unalaska, the Aleutian Island fishing port that's famous for its rough weather and flight cancellations. Since Raven declared bankruptcy and shut down in April, residents and fishermen have had to depend largely on chartered planes, loosely coordinated through a Facebook group. Robinson's reaction upon hearing about Float Shuttle's winning bid was similar to other Alaskans who live in the rural hub communities that Raven used to serve.
My question would be, do they know what they're up against? Because I don't believe they do.
One thing Robinson says would put him more at ease is if Raven's new owners have experience in the Aleutians and in Alaska. And it turns out that they do, to an extent. Rob McKinney, who's going to be Raven's new chief executive, spent 6 years running a Southeast Alaska airline called Wings. A second float executive also spent 5 years in Alaska working for Raven, McKinney says.
So, we think that not only do we bring a depth of aviation knowledge, but, we feel confident that we're Alaska-specific as well.
The new Raven is keeping its name for now, and it intends to use a $32 million COVID-19 payroll grant that's been provisionally made available by the Trump administration. Float Shuttle only bought six of Raven's nine planes that were up for sale, but they plan to lease three more to get the fleet back up to full size and will be keeping all the planes in Alaska, McKinney says.
We are 100% focused on Alaska and serving Alaskans.
The major investor for the new Raven is what's called an incubator, a company that helps startups get off the ground. This particular incubator is called HMCINQ. Its companies have to have at least one owner who's a graduate of Harvey Mudd College, a California liberal arts school that focuses on engineering, science, and math. In this case, that's Tom Shea, one of Float Shuttle's co-founders. He says the incubator will be much more hands-off and community-minded than the private equity companies that owned the old Raven, who rural residents often criticized for being unresponsive.
We're actually really aware of that frustration, and that is certainly something that our team is dead set on rectifying and changing. We want to be the hometown airline.
The sale to Float Shuttle has been cleared by federal bankruptcy court, the company says, and the new owners aim to have federal approval to resume flying in about a month. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
The coronavirus pandemic has pushed farmers' markets across Alaska to get creative this summer. Some are requiring masks, and others, like the Sitka Farmers Market, are going virtual. That's because, as KCAW's Aaron McKinstry tells us, has more on how worries about the food supply have food concerns are about how the food supply and food security concerns are pushing markets to operate this summer despite the challenges.
Laura Schmidt stands inside a new high tunnel at St. Peter's Fellowship Farm near downtown Sitka. The air is about 15 degrees warmer in here than it is outside. A perfect home for a sea of zucchini plants. She bends down and plucks one of their bright yellow flowers.
So I peeled off the boy flower, and now this is the boy flower. And I'm going to put it on the inside of the, you know, the female section. And you can see right below it, there's a little zucchini growing.
Schmidt is hand-pollinating the plants to make sure they produce healthy fruit. Then she picks an early zucchini that she'll sell on Saturday.
These zucchinis are getting pretty good, though. They're nice. I might pick this one.
She's the lead gardener for the Sitka Local Foods Network, which runs the town's farmers market. It's still operating this summer, despite the pandemic, but things are different. Customers pre-order and head to the farm just for pickup. Having less interaction with customers is an adjustment, Schmidt says, but she's glad that people are still getting local food.
Yeah, it's really nice to see people and have people come look at, you know, all your things that you've been working on, but, you know, what can you do? It's still, I mean, it's really nice that people can eat this produce and that it has some place to go and people will appreciate it.
Some farmers markets, like the ones in Homer and Fairbanks, for example, are still operating in person, but they've required masks and reduced the number of vendors. Sitka Local Foods Network President Charles Bingham says they didn't really have that option. Normally, they operate at the Alaska Native Brotherhood Hall, but it was still closed when they were planning the market. St. Peter's Fellowship Farm doesn't have much space to spread out, so customers have to order and pay online. Bingham says they also reduced their vendors to a handful focused solely on food.
Our mission is to increase the amount of locally harvested and produced foods in the diets of Southeast Alaskans. And so arts and crafts is nice at the farmers market, but it's really not on our mission.
He's also on the Alaska Food Policy Council board and says they've seen job loss associated with the COVID-19 pandemic lead to increased food insecurity in many Alaska communities. Sitka's farmers market is quadrupling benefits for food stamp recipients when they purchase a vegetable box, but there's only so much they can do to help, Bingham says.
We have a limited amount of food being grown here in town, and so, you know, food security is a major issue in this community, and that's why, you know, we love to see more gardens, more, you know, more people growing their own.
And affording food isn't the only food security issue the pandemic has raised, says Alaska Farmers Market Association President Robbie Mixon. This spring, empty store shelves and reports of coronavirus spread in slaughterhouses down south highlighted food supply chain concerns in Alaska. That's one reason Mixon's organization worked with state agencies to declare farmers markets essential businesses in early April.
Realizing, hey, we're actually at the end of some of our food chains here. Alaska is often the last stop, you know, not being connected to the lower 48. So that's one reason I think it's important to shop local now more than ever.
Each Alaska market is adapting their model to meet local needs and requirements. And market gardener Laura Schmidt says that's fitting in a city and state where growing things means thinking outside the box all the time. Not just during the pandemic.
It's always different in Sitka. Mm-hmm. It's not quite agricultural as we know it in other places.
After a rainy June, she's hoping for a sunny July to boost local food production. But rain or shine, visitors or no visitors, she'll make do with what she's got. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
The Midday Report on KMXT is brought to you in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, where you'll find the Simmons Dual Comfort Mattress, allowing you to customize your sleep experience. Also featuring massage and zero gravity chairs from the Human Touch Company and sofas and love seats by Stanton. 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Seafood sales surge at retail. More after this.
Did you know that eating wild and sustainable Alaska seafood can boost your immune system? Learn more at wildalaskaseafood.com.
The COVID virus stalled seafood sales at restaurants, where up to 75% of Americans opt for fish or shellfish meals. But at supermarkets and food outlets featuring online sales and pickup or delivery, seafood has become the fastest growing category. More people are choosing seafood to cook at home or buying creative pre-made options at stores. Chicago-based Information Resources Incorporated has tracked consumer supermarket purchases for over 40 years and said that year-to-date, sales of both canned and frozen seafood were nearly 37% higher over 4 weeks ending in mid-April, and the upswing has continued. Nielsen, which has tracked trends for over 90 years, said seafood was the fastest-growing category at the end of May when purchase volumes jumped 26% over the prior 13 weeks. And at the end of June, seafood posted the most significant growth for 10 weeks straight, up 64% from a year ago. Sales of fresh seafood spiked nearly 60%. According to Nielsen data provided to Seafood Source, sales of fresh lobster increased almost 292%, followed by crab up more than 150%. Frozen seafood sales, which spiked more than 50% in May, increased by nearly 21% in late June. Frozen crab had the biggest sales gain of nearly 170%, followed by frozen scallops. 32% of households said they were extremely or very likely to use grocery online shopping and delivery or pickup even if the virus subsides, especially those over 60. The upward trend at retail is likely to continue. Restaurants that had reopened are now facing restrictions again as the virus spikes in many U.S. states. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMSI instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.
And thank you, Daily Mirror, for your support. I don't see any personal messages, so we're going to jump right into the weather. Right now in Kodiak, it's 61 degrees. Beautiful, beautiful day. Our high is, we might get up to 62. I think we can do that. Winds the east-southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight in Kodiak, low of 53, 10% chance of rain. Some passing clouds, low of 53, wind southwest at 10 to 15 miles an hour. And tomorrow in Kodiak, another beautiful day, 61 is our high for tomorrow, 20% chance of rain. Winds east-northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Well, today is the 10th of July. The sun rose today at 5:26 a.m. and it'll set tonight at 11:04 p.m., giving us 17 hours and 38 minutes of daylight. But we will have lost 2 minutes and 38 seconds of that sun. But the good news is that it's going to rise tomorrow at 5:28 a.m. Our record high was 82 in 2004. Record low was 40 in 1927. If you're heading out onto the water, let's take a look at your marine forecast. A 1,000 millibar low that is 330 nautical miles south of Middleton Island will move to 170 nautical miles south of Sitka by Saturday afternoon while dissipating. For, let's see, west of the Barren Islands, including Kamishak Bay, I don't see any small craft advisories for any of our marine region, so that's good. West of the Barren Islands today, west wind of 20 knots with seas at 4 feet. Tonight, southeast wind of 15 knots and seas at 3 feet. For the Barren Islands east today, variable wind of 10 knots with seas at 3 feet. And tonight, south wind of 15 knots with seas at 4 feet. For Marmot Island to Sitkanak today, northwest wind of 15 knots, becoming southwest wind in the afternoon, seas at 5 feet. Chiniak today, northeast wind of 10 knots, becoming southeast in the afternoon, seas at 3 feet. For Mermaid Bay today, variable wind of less than 10 knots, becoming southeast wind of 10 knots in the afternoon, seas at 3 feet. And for the Shelikoff Strait today, west wind of 20 knots with seas at 3 feet. All right, fish and game.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 6. This announcement was issued at 10 a.m. July 7th. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Tuesday, July 7th to 9 p.m. Thursday, July 9th in the following areas: the Cape Alitak, Humpy Deadman, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, Olga Bay, and Dog Salmon Flats sections of the Alitak District, and the Outer Iakulik section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Close water adjustments. Close waters will remain reduced in the Dog Salmon Flats section from 9 p.m. Tuesday, July 7th to 9 p.m. Thursday, July 9th to the ADF&G markers located at the stream terminus of Dog Salmon Creek, stream number 257403. Close waters will remain expanded near Horse Marine Lagoon from 9 p.m. Tuesday, July 7th to 9 p.m. Thursday, July 9th in the Dog Salmon Flats section. As previously announced, the mainland district will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Wednesday, July 8th. The following areas will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Thursday, July 9th: the Outer Karlik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Northwest Kodiak District, except the Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, and Zacher Bay sections will remain closed, the Afognak District, except the southeast Afognak, Duck Bay, Iziut Bay, and Inner and Outer Katoy Bay sections remain closed, the northeast Kodiak District, the east side Kodiak District, except the Inner Ugak Bay section remains closed, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Close water adjustments. Close waters are reduced until 9 p.m. Thursday, July 9th, in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, and in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek and to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek. Until further notice, in that portion of the northwest Kodiak and southwest Kodiak districts, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, Chinook salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse and gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Concerning the North Shelikof Strait fishery, short notice in-period closures may occur for seine fisheries in the seaward zones of the North Shelikof Strait area as designated in the North Shelikof Strait sockeye salmon management plan. Closure announcements may occur at 8:30 a.m., 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., or 8:30 p.m. on VHF Channel 6. The following area remains open until further notice: the Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area, Telrod Cove. Closed waters are shown on the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in the Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations. Statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recordophone at 486-4559.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
And thanks for listening to the Midday Report and the Island Messenger here on KMXT. We got Byways coming up, and then stay tuned for Spotlight.
Island Byways is supported by Orion's Mountain Sports, specializing in high-quality clothing and equipment for hiking, climbing, and kayaking. Orion's Mountain Sports, located at 1247 Mill Bay Road. Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the July 10th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Moses supposes his toeses are roses, but Moses supposes erroneously. For Moses, he noses his toeses aren't roses, as Moses supposes his toeses to be. Anybody remember what that's from? This little ditty has been around in some form or another since the late 1800s. But the most recent version came from a movie with a title that could be a cheerful Kodiak theme song. And that's it for clues. You can give me a call at KMXT if you know the answer. The whole reason that little ditty is stuck in my head is the abundance of roses right now. They're filling the hillsides with color, those delicate pink blossoms. Don't be fooled, these are tough plants, and they seem to thrive when the winter is harsh, like our last one was. The wildflowers continue to put on a great show in the meadows and alpine areas, and have you noticed the salmon berries lately? Looking good. We are losing daylight now, about 2.5 minutes a day, but we're gaining stargazing time in return. Right now, we have an extended view of a comet called Neowise. that you can see with binoculars pretty much from sunset to sunrise. And unless it burns up soon, which is possible, we should be able to see it for at least the rest of the month. If you're a night owl, look to the north-northwest after sunset, about 15 degrees above the horizon. Overnight, it moves gradually to the northeast, but stays near the same altitude throughout the night. You should be able to see it until nearly dawn, when the sky is just too bright to see it anymore. So over the next couple of weeks, plan a little nighttime or early morning stargazing to catch our closest comet. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.